This is an iHeart podcast.
Okay, let's talk about these assassinations over the weekend, the riots over the weekend. Yes, we're going to talk about those separately. Liz Collin is here. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, I want to have a talk about where we're at in America and what it means for you and me and what we're going to look like going forward. And I just felt like having this talk because I'm sure you followed the news over the weekend. I'm sure you've been reading everything you can right now about this assassination in Minnesota. Actually, I guess assassinations. State lawmaker dead. Husband dead. Another state senator shot. The man is already in custody. And look, we're not going to get into all the he said, she said details about this guy and things like that right now, because we're still sifting through all the information, who he was, what his motivation was. There's too much bunk information out there, and we're not going to dig into that right now on the show. Let's let it play out. What we are going to dig into is something that we have brought up from time to time about our culture, how our culture is changing for the worse, and how we are becoming a culture of assassination. I talked about this back in September. We are going to move into being a culture of assassination. The ground is already prepped. The ground is prepped. The people have been conditioned. We now are going to be a country where political leaders, this is not going to be isolated to Trump, they are going to live in fear for their lives. That's where we are. And it's where we're going to be. You know, we won an election. It didn't change that. It's where we're going to be. So let's talk about why. Why are we a culture of assassination now? It's a long, complicated answer. So here it is. First, the unbelievable rise of mental illness in the country. And this is just mental illness that has been diagnosed. The numbers are through the roof. The percentage of Americans on antidepressants, through the roof. We just destroy every other country in these numbers. Combine that, and I realize that one leads to the other oftentimes, with the number of broken homes in the country. Lost, drugged out, anxiety-ridden, depressed. This is, all politics aside, that already has created a toxic stew of mentally ill people. You know, if I have 1,000 people in a room, in a theater, and I'm trying to encourage them to commit acts of violence, but all 1,000 people come from solid, two-parent homes, raised with values, they know who they are, have good jobs, good lives, I'll probably fail in my efforts to get somebody to go crazy enough to go kill someone. But if I'm standing in front of 1,000 people and they're all depressed, they're all anxiety ridden, they all hate their lives, hate their parents, hate themselves, hate their country, am I going to be able to find at least one in that group to go commit an act of murder? Probably. My odds go way up. Well, that's where we are as a country, see? We are there. And when you combine the toxic stew of America's mental illness, broken home problem, with the never-ending apocalyptic rhetoric from the communists on the other side, what you have done is you have created a culture that guarantees political violence. We will always have it. And do keep this in mind. The left loves it. They like it. When you woke up, it was a Democrat who got killed and her husband. But when you woke up, probably said the same thing I did. I think it was it Saturday morning, Sunday morning? This assassination stuff, woke up, I'm looking at it on my phone, talked to Aub about it, talked to my wife about it. Both of us were all, oh, that is just terrible. Killed at their homes. That's not how the left reacted at all. In fact, as they always do, the left saw an opportunity.
There are so-called leaders in America, in elected and appointed office, who are creating a climate of violence, making it clear to some of their supporters that it should be open season on public officials.
I feel like Trump has really popped the lid off of the rhetoric and the sense of hate and violence and promoted this type of an environment. It's profoundly disturbing for all of us.
President Trump is the biggest problem here. I mean, he has used hateful, degrading rhetoric from the day he decided to run for president. And then pardoning all of the January 6th attackers at the U.S. Capitol. Look, if Donald Trump and the Republican Party want this kind of thing to stop, they need to change their rhetoric and stop pardoning people who commit acts that are dangerous to this.
In mind, I think the first thing we need to do is have our leaders take the temperature down. We're not expecting to see that from President Trump. Unfortunately, he has more than anyone given the permission structure for this reality. And even what we've seen in the last week in Los Angeles, sparked by a kind of state violence, by ICE being extremely aggressive in their approach to immigration enforcement, that created a response from...
Couple things. I know you're probably looking at that little montage and you're rolling your eyes. Are these people crazy? That's a lie. It's Democrats that... Listen, it is crazy. But here's what I want you to understand. And what's hard for us to always understand. It's hard for me. It's hard for you. They're not speaking to you when they go on television and speak like that. They know that normal people are going to reject that kind of dishonesty. That's not the Democrat base. They're not speaking to normal people. They're talking to that theater full of 1,000 sick freaks who can be nudged into committing acts of violence, especially when they believe the violence is justified and the violence is in self-defense. And when they believe they're stopping Nazis, we had a North Carolina state rep post on Facebook saying cuts may be necessary while holding a decapitated head of Donald Trump and Stephen Miller. Of course, Stephen Miller had a swastika on his head. Oh, by the way, what would you do? What is okay? What is acceptable to do when you're stopping Adolf Hitler? Well, there's a reason they talk like this.
Donald Trump is America's Hitler.
Yeah.
Let's say you're sitting at home, popping antidepressants. You hate your life. You have no self-worth. You're sitting there consuming this stuff all day long. How much does it take? How many nudges do you need before you grab a weapon and you go do something absolutely terrible? Again, I know you roll your eyes whenever Eric Swalwell speaks at all, let alone when he calls Trump a Nazi. But the mentally ill, deranged liberal Aunt Peggy in her house does not roll her eyes. She hears it, she believes it, and she marches forward. How many mentally ill sit back and watch this kind of rhetoric?
And we all know one thing. Donald Trump is just lying about the bill. Lying about the bill. Well, here's the We Are All Going to Die Act.
Really wanted to celebrate the Army's 250th birthday, then spending the money the correct way, not with a parade for a tin pot dictator wannabe, which is what Donald Trump is. I felt that it was obscene.
I'm fighting today's Nazis.
Look, I remember a few stand-ups ago when I talked about what terrorism looks like. This is it. There should be no question to what our country would look like had the Confederacy won.
What they want is to fulfill Stephen Miller's white nationalist fantasy.
Hands up. I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary. Because the fact of the matter is, a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your... Hands up!
If this is how this administration responds to a senator with a question, if this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, to cooks, to day laborers.
That kind of rhetoric. For 10 years now, 10 years since Donald Trump came down the escalator, that kind of rhetoric for 10 years is exactly how you have grown men taking it to the streets, beating up on a Trump doll.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we were just talking about
it this morning. Oh. Ah! No! 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 Don't! Bad boy! Bad, bad!
What kind of people will go out and kill? They've been killing for so long, shooting, killing. I mean, back to the congressional baseball game, those kind of people activated with the rhetoric they hear from Democrat politicians and pushed out by America's media, who love these acts of violence. A culture of assassination. I am sad to say I take no joy in this at all. The one we just had won't be the last one. There will be more. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. This happened in Minnesota, so we might as well go to our favorite journalist from Minnesota. Liz Collin is going to join us, give us the updates on the latest and worst, I guess, with this whole affair. Before we get to Liz Collin, I want to talk to you about your cell phone service. I want to talk to you about Independence Day. July 4th is coming. And there's something special Pure Talk's doing, and I want you to participate in it. Pure Talk, they're handing out allegiance flags. You know what those are? They're American flags that are made in America. They're the best flags, of course, because they're made in America. Pure Talk, giving out 1,000 of these flags to veterans. What veterans? The ones you nominate. Go to puretalk.com/nominate. Maybe you are that veteran, and put in a name. Let's honor some vets this Independence Day. And while you're there, switch your cell phone service to the phone company that does this. You know who's not doing this? Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. You'll pay less. Keep your phone. Keep your number. Switch to Pure Talk. I love them so much. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, we still need some journalists. I realize we don't have a ton of them left in the country, but whenever there are big stories, I don't know about you, I'm the same way. I need somebody, given the volume of information that comes at us, especially on social media, I need somebody to lay out for me details and facts, just in an unbiased way, laying things out. We saw these assassinations / assassination attempts in Minnesota this weekend, very freaking sad. And I was doing the same thing you were. Don't think that I have some special access. I'm on my phone, video, articles. He was a hoot. I don't know. That's why we need Liz. Joining me now, one of the better investigative reporters I've ever talked to in my life with Alpha News, Liz Collin. Okay, Liz, I'm just going to hand the program over to you. Can you give us a timeline of what happened, who, what, when, where, and why, and I'll ask questions from there.
Yeah, just really a horrific weekend in Minnesota, unlike anything we've ever seen before. We've certainly seen a lot, but just a terrible tragedy that took place. This all unfolded beginning about 2 in the morning on Saturday. We now know the charges are becoming public after this Vance Bolter has now been charged federally, could actually even face the death penalty. That wasn't ruled out today, but he went first to Senator John Hoffman's home, a state senator here in Minnesota, shot multiple times at Senator Hoffman and his wife. We understand his wife actually jumped over their daughter as well to shield her from gunfire. And this Bolter was actually dressed as a police officer, and that's what he said at the door to basically open up. He's with the police department. They let him into their home, and this is when the shots are fired. He then leaves that address. We now understand he stopped at 2 other addresses. People were not home at those addresses, other state lawmakers as well, and then ends up about more than an hour later at Speaker Emerita Melissa Hortman, former House Speaker here in Minnesota, and her husband, Mark, are home at the time. And this is when he, again, is dressed in, you know, as a police officer. He starts shooting into their home. They are tragically both killed, and an alert police officer ends up actually at their home at this exact same time. starts shooting at him. This alert police officer wanted to go check. It's only about 5 miles or so away from where Senator Hoffman had been shot and his wife. This cop just happens to sort of, you know, see him in the act, shoots. Somehow he's able to get away. He has a squad car, something that looks like a squad car. He had a security company parked in the driveway, gets away on foot. And this manhunt then ensues, nearly a 48-hour manhunt to find him. Eventually, he's found in a farm field late last night, about 10 o'clock or so, and just surrenders to police. Is actually seen just putting his hands up in the air. A drone was flying overhead at the time, and was kind of laying on his back, from what I understand, and then got up, walked to the Bearcat, the SWAT vehicle that was nearby, and identified himself as Lance Bolter, and putting an end to this, the largest manhunt we understand in Minnesota history.
Liz, I am positive that you've at least seen the endless rumors going back and forth, and I have no interest in trafficking in any of that stuff at all. So can you tell me what you know about this guy's background? Is he a criminal, drugs, divorce, broken family? What do we know about him?
Yeah, I agree. There is so much out there, and we've been sifting through it. I have very good sources here in Minnesota, and you can tell something is going on with this guy's life these last couple years. He had been appointed to a workforce development board under Governor Mark Dayton and also Governor Tim Walz. However, there's more than 100 of these boards, and hard to say if, you know, who knew who and whatnot. But what's interesting is he was renting a room at a home in North Minneapolis, but yet he had a family in Green Isle, Minnesota, which is about an hour from Minneapolis, a family, 5 children and a wife. And he would show up at this address, from what I understand, 2 to 3 times a week. And the neighbors tell me that he would basically arrive at about midnight and leave about 4 or 5 in the morning. We heard some details come out today as part of these charges that say he was doing kind of research on all of these victims. They did discover a lot of they first called it a manifesto, but it was described to be more by law enforcement sources as a hit list, actual just names of people. They seem to be all Democrats. More than 60 names is what we've obtained. Also a Planned Parenthood location. So things like that were all scribbled in a notebook, from what we understand. And I think people, rightfully so, are looking for answers. But it seems that there was perhaps some financial trouble going on with him, and he'd been planning something for quite some time, just by the appearance of everything here, Jesse.
Do we know? Obviously, a lot has been made about him working on one of Tim Walz's boards. But governors are over a lot of boards. Governors do a lot of appointees. Do we know, do we have any knowledge, has Tim Walz ever met this guy? And if they met, was it, you know, hey, can you take a picture for my Instagram? Or do they actually know each other? Is there any kind of a relationship here at all? What do we know? And I don't need any help to hate Tim Walz, but does he actually know this guy?
Yeah, I think that the Star Tribune did some reporting this weekend, and they said that they were able to get some answers from his office that it appears he did not. Again, there are quite a few boards. His roommate went ahead and said that he was a Republican, and people are running with that. But nowadays, it seems everybody wants to make everything, obviously, about politics. But, you know, Democrat, Republican, this guy's a monster at the end of the day, and did not make much sense with what was happening in his life. We understand that he sent a text message at about 6 in the morning to his family. So this would have been several hours after the murders of Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark. He sent this text at 6:18 a.m. Dad went to war last night. I don't want to say much more because I don't want to implicate you all in this. So this was at 6:18 hours after that. We've also obtained some video. I encourage people to follow me on X. It's Liz Collin, and also Alpha News MN. But some surveillance video where you can see actually this guy come back to his residence in Minneapolis. He leaves then wearing this cowboy hat, has a hammer in his hand, breaks a window in another, what looks to be kind of a cop-looking squad in his driveway there in Minneapolis, and then proceeds to leave on foot. So it sounds like law enforcement, they're still trying to determine if anybody else was driving him around or if there's any other connections here. He also showed up at a bank when he's wearing this cowboy hat, and the FBI released that picture this weekend, but he showed up at a bank at about 9 a.m. on Saturday, from what we understand now, with the charges to empty out his bank account and give a guy some money for a Buick he bought and also an e-bike to get around. And it happened to be just an alert person in Green Isle who spotted him then, and this is when the walls kind of closed in for him with law enforcement stationed by his address in Green Isle, Minnesota.
An e-bike. Wow. Certainly sounds like a criminal mastermind. Liz, thank you as always. I appreciate you and your report, and come back soon. It's not funny, but an e-bike? Certainly not going to get in a high-speed pursuit. Anyway, quit. It's not funny. It's not funny that our T levels are dropping either. Do you want to find yourself purchasing an e-bike one day? No, you don't. You don't want that. That's why you need a male vitality stack from Chalk. You will never purchase an e-bike if your T levels get high enough. That's a fact. Doctors all say it. Actually, they probably don't, but they would say it if they looked into it. Chalk is natural herbal supplements. I take one every day. That is what I do every single day with my breakfast. I take a male vitality stack over 3 years. I won't miss it. When I travel, I bring it with me. That's how good I feel all the time. Full of energy. My mind works well. You want to join me? You want to feel like that all the time? No more afternoon nap time? Chalk.com/JesseTV. Get you a big old fat discount. We'll be back. All right, let's talk about the protests over the weekend, or lack thereof. Let's talk about the age of the protesters, because that's something people were talking about. In fact, let's begin right there with the age. I know several reporters who were on the ground with the different No Kings protests, attempted riots around the country. Almost every single friend I had who was there remarked to me, or remarked publicly, that it was old. The crowd was old. It was a bunch of senior citizens. It was a bunch of, well, this.
I'm just so scared. I'm 74 years old. I worry about everything. And I just am so scared and upset. And I don't understand why people voted for this person.
Let's talk about that. In fact, let's just have a little chat, shall we? You saw that. I saw that. And it's unbelievably sad for a variety of reasons. But one of the things that really hits you is 74 years old? 74 years old, and you're some completely insane nut job crying on TV over things that aren't true? How can this be? And you want to know why you had that thought? Why I had that thought? Because we have this image of what an older person should be. Us normal people, or maybe you are an older person, we have this image of what a 74-year-old woman should be. A 74-year-old woman should be a loving grandma. She volunteers at the church. She bakes cookies, probably knits. Her house smells funny, but she's wonderful. That's how we picture a 74-year-old woman, or maybe you are that 74-year-old woman. So when we see a video of one like that, it begs the question, how? Why? When you look at the protests, because hardly anybody showed up, which we'll get to in a moment, but when you look at the protests, all these people, legions of old people, hardly any young people, how, why? Well, let me explain. Let me pause on this and explain. I read a story a little while back. It wasn't important. It certainly wasn't national news. I think it was out of New Jersey, possibly New York. It was a mafia story. And the story was some mafia guy had capped some other mafia guy in the head, shot him, killed him. And the guy who did the killing was late 60s. I want to say he was 68 years old. And it hit me then, 68 years old? You should be a grandpa. You should be at your grandson's t-ball games and stuff like that. What are you, you're shooting people in the head at 68 years old? But here's the thing about life and the way life works, you see. You will choose a path in this life. And if you choose the wrong path, you will actually get worse the longer you're on it. You will lose more and more of your mind and your soul the longer you are on the bad path. Think about it like alcohol. If I go out tonight, I take the earpiece out of my ear, and I buy a whole bottle of whiskey, and I drink a whole bottle of whiskey tonight. Oh, I won't be here tomorrow. I'll be feeling rough, but it won't be the end of the world. Give me a day, some water, some ibuprofen, and I'll recover just fine. But what if I did that every single day for a year? What's my health look like? What's my liver look like? Now 2 years. Now 3 years, now 4 years. What do I look like? What do I physically look like after 20 years of that? What do my organs look like after 20 years of that? Now think about the average American Democrat who never breaks out of the propaganda network they live in. We love to point to young, crazy Democrats, these young communists, and we talk about how crazy young people are and these young people are nuts, but the truth is, that's a young human being still figuring out who they are, what they believe, what they want. Their mind is still developing. And that young person, even the craziest of the crazy ones, can still probably turn things around because they haven't been on the path, the dark path of communism for so long. But when you are a 74-year-old woman, you've spent how many decades consuming CNN, reading the New York Times, listening when Democrats call Republicans Hitler? You think to yourself that human being should be settled and wise and making cookie for the grandkids. That human being, because they've been drinking that bottle of whiskey for decades, is way more messed up than the 20-year-old could ever be because she got on a dark path and has been marching down it. That's why these protests, it was mainly old people. You see, they couldn't really get it off the ground. They spent allegedly $2.1 billion. That's the number out there. $2.1 billion of money, some of it taxpayer money, shelled out to different communist groups around the United States of America because they wanted something gigantic. They wanted something that would stop the presses. They wanted this national blowout riot. That's what they actually wanted. But they didn't get it. In fact, really the only people they could get out there were the older people. Why didn't they get it? Why did it fail? I mean, they brought in all the heavy hitters, even communist John Denver.
You are the community to this president's chaos. And together, we build a future of opportunity and justice for all. Hope over fear, aspiration over anger, the promise of America for each and every American. That is what we are fighting for today.
So why didn't it pop off? Well, the thing about riots, whipping up the public into a mass frenzy, you can do it sometimes. You can't do it all the time. And if it turns out, if the cause turns out to be a scam, you will have difficulty bringing out the normies the next time you want to have one. You see, that's what takes a riot from being some fairly embarrassing little protest with communist John Denver into being something that looks huge, that looks national. It's not the communist agitators. You can always pay those freaks and get them out into the streets. You need the normies to participate. You need average, normal American to turn through the channels on the television and see protests and think, I want to get involved. You need normie American to get on Facebook or wherever they are and say, oh my gosh, did you see that? They're protesting downtown. Let's go. But the reason the numbers weren't there is that normie American stayed home. Why? Why did the normie American stay home? Why can't the communists seem to whip people up into a frenzy anymore? Two reasons, two gigantic reasons. COVID and George Floyd. COVID, we watched. Well, we watched a lot of this.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
That ain't a riot, what we're seeing right now in Minneapolis.
Excuse me, any reasonable person would say we shouldn't be destroying other people's property, but these are not reasonable times.
And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
The beautiful thing is we're seeing citizens who are caring and concerned. They're hitting the streets.
Heartwarming to see so many people turn out peacefully.
You know, Brooke, I think this is a march, really.
But as they're coming off, it's peaceful. They're saying peaceful protest.
Across the country, it's bringing people together, community with unity.
People are risking COVID to explain to this country that we're fed up.
What happened was the American communist, he turned on Norm and Normie, turned them into fellow rioters, fellow travelers, and the American people, many of them, they took to the streets. They participated in communist-created insanity. Whether it's the mania around COVID, you better wear a mask or you can't come to Thanksgiving. Maybe it's the St. George Floyd stuff. But what happened was, at the back end of all that, normie American, not talking you and me always knew the truth. Normie Americans sat at home. Their child's education had been destroyed. They just had their fourth stroke at the age of 35. They realized that taking Aunt Jemima off of the pancake batter probably didn't do anything to solve the problem of racism. Normie American looked around at the end of communist agitation after communist agitation, and they said to themselves, I don't feel like these people are honest brokers. I don't feel like the media, the Democrat Party, I don't feel like anything they're saying is true. The last time I went along with these things, my country got melted in front of me. Now what's happened is Democrats have reached the end of their current credibility. They may get some back one day, that's how it works, but as of right now, the true crisis for the American media, the true crisis for the American Democrat Party is a credibility crisis. They took the last of the public trust and they built a George Floyd statue with it. And now Normie stays at home when Randy Weingarten screeches at them from the stage. It's wonderful. That too may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let's talk about Iran and Israel with Steve Dace. What's happening over there? Is it simple or is it complicated? Next. Is this World War III? We haven't really touched on the Iran-Israel thing going on right now, and I'll tell you why. Foreign policy is complicated. Everybody loves to make everything simple, but foreign policy is the most complicated thing in the world. Different parties, different countries, different interests, it's never as simple as someone is making it out to be. What is actually happening and where might all this go? Let's ask Steve about all this. Joining me now, my friend Steve Dace, who on top of his show has a wonderful book out there right now called Richie Meets the Rainbow. Highly recommend you pick that one up for the old kiddos. All right, Steve, Israel appears to be beating the living crap out of Iran. Is this World War III? Where's all this going? What are we going to do? What are the players? Talk about it.
We don't know. I think what you just said a minute ago is so vital, and I've been trying to express it to my own audience in the last week or so, Jesse. I think even a lot of our own people that follow shows like ours, which are going to be some of the more informed people in the country, probably don't understand that most of the Arab Muslim world, and I use that term on purpose, Iran is not an Arab country. Most of the Arab Muslim world also does not like Iran, also does not want Iran to have a nuclear arsenal, maybe for different reasons than the Israelis. But in this case, I think they're kind of fine up to a point. You know, letting Israel come in and fire Cousin Eddie. The Griswold, Clark doesn't want Cousin Eddie. That's kind of Iran to the Arab world. They don't want Cousin Eddie moving into the house either, okay? They think he's weird too. Not necessarily fond of Israel, but they don't like Cousin Eddie either. They just don't want to be seen as firing Cousin Eddie because they're still both Griswolds. So you let a third party come in and maybe fire them instead. And I think the devastating effect of this offensive preemptive strike, it might be the most devastating preemptive strike the world has seen maybe since Blitzkrieg. I think that it has so knocked the Iranians off kilter that I also think maybe some other entities like Hezbollah and others that might have been wanting to try to capitalize on this are like, oh, that could be us next. Now, this will not be an unlimited meter, however, that the Israelis have, right? So right now they have the upper hand. Right now they are dictating terms. But there does come a point here where the psychology, because this is also very complicated, the psychology does change and alter. So far, the Israelis have avoided a lot of mass civilian casualties. And I think if you're, whichever the two camps you're in, right, we can't do any more stupid wars, so it's just that simple camp, or Israel's our friend, so we got to do whatever they want us to do. Neither of those camps, things are very simple for. But so this is going to kind of determine the law of unintended consequences and what happens after this that we cannot foresee is kind of going to determine, I think, the nature of the U.S.-Israeli relationship moving forward. But I think a lot of that are things that we still don't know yet.
Steve, one thing that I found interesting, not necessarily surprising for a lot of the reasons you just laid out, but interesting is the lack of friends Iran apparently has now mm-hmm. that they're down. I mean, this is a country that's conducted military drills with Russia and China. We know there's all kinds of business that crosses borders back and forth between all these countries. We know about how many terrorist groups they sponsor. And all of a sudden, Israel takes out a few generals and Iran wakes up and they're fresh out of friends. Is it just that everyone's kind of done with the Ayatollah?
I think that's part of it for sure. You know, there's the old JFK saying, you know, victory has 1,000 fathers and defeat is an orphan. If there had been scores of civilian casualties opening night, Jesse, and if this thing did not go off with the level of precision and panache that it did, I think some of those countries you just mentioned would have been more interested in using this as a vehicle by which to get involved. But again, we still have the law of unintended consequences here. I know that the followers of you and I are watching big name people on both sides of this on the right go at each other by name, tear each other apart, calling each other various forms of traitor. All right. But I just don't think things are as simple as either one of the leaders of these respective camps seem to think that they are. For example, China's not really facing yet the full brunt of the fact that it buys about 80% of Iran's foreign oil that it exports every year. Right? That's about 20% of China's petro supply it gets from Iran. It's also in the middle of a trade war with Donald Trump right now. You know, the last time that China felt the squeeze of a trade war and also was feeling economic hardship with all the uprisings that were going on in Shanghai and Hong Kong, they unleashed a virus on the rest of the world. So the idea that they're just going to sit there and say, you know what, we're fine, you know, having a 20% hit the supply chain and therefore the cost of oil becomes more prohibitive to us, I don't think that's accurate. On the other hand, if you're in the other group that said, well, if Israel ever struck Iran, all these BRICS nations would show up and World War III would happen day one. We're on day four of this, and that has yet to happen yet, as you just said. I think, though, it is way too early for either one of these sides to take a victory lap. Who should take a victory lap are the Israelis. What they have pulled off here, again, it's maybe the most devastating preemptive strike we have seen in the history of modern warfare, and it has certainly reset the board in the Middle East, but that board is not settled yet.
One thing I'm finding very, very fascinating is Trump versus some other powerful people in our government. Here was Lindsey Graham on the news.
If diplomacy is not successful and we left with the option of force, I would urge President Trump to go all in to make sure that when this operation is over, there's nothing left standing in Iran regarding their nuclear program. If that means providing bombs, provide bombs. If that means
busting bombs,
whatever bombs, if it means flying with Israel, fly with Israel. The worst possible outcome for the world is to take the Iranian nuclear program on and leave it standing. Mm-hmm. That will be a disaster.
Well, it's no surprise to anybody that Lindsey Graham is foaming at the mouth. At least I think that was foam coming out of his mouth about the whole thing. But Trump seems to be out there still wanting to make a deal, I guess. It almost seems like these two get crossways foreign policy-wise a lot.
Well, you know what? I'm going to be like a lot of Lindsey Graham's friends, and I'm going to go both ways on this one, Jesse. There's part of what Lindsey said that I do agree with, which is you cannot do this halfway. All right, this cannot be Israel just does just the tip in Iran. That's not going to work. All right, and that level of weakness is what will then summon Iran's partners that right now are also pretty shaken by the level of devastation and precision they've seen from the Israelis. And so, since this amount of calculus was made by Bibi and the government of Israel, then at this point, I think they should go all the way until whatever remnants are reachable of the Iranian nuclear program. They'll get no points later for showing up and pulling out too prematurely. At this point, finish the job is what I would urge. But where I would disagree with Lindsey is if I were advising President Trump, brother, you're getting the best of both worlds right now, right? We have had this dilemma that we've been arguing on the right since Trump took office, right? And very high profile thought leaders on our side are arguing this out amongst themselves vehemently right now, right? We all agree on two things. We do not want any more stupid wars in the Middle East, and Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And so what is the possible way to accomplish one of those without the other one? Well, to me, you're kind of on a path of potentially accomplishing that right now. Israel is willing to be the bad guy. And at that point, it doesn't cost Trump anything at all. He's not risking any of the amount of capital, which is substantial and significant, that he's built up in the Middle East. In fact, a lot of these Arab Muslim countries are actually shooting down Iranian drones. Even Turkey is shooting down Iranian drones as we speak. All right. So at this point, Trump has the best of both worlds here. Israel is taking on the full brunt of this in terms of culpability. At the same time, if it works, Trump will be able to declare victory later. And then if it doesn't, he'll be able to claim plausible deniability. I would urge him to actually stay on that path. If Israel is willing to take on the full brunt of responsibility for this, let them.
Steve, talk to me about Richie meeting the rainbow.
Well, you know, we just had Father's Day. Jesse, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, I'm sure you have. Dads don't get to be the hero a lot in our culture today. So I wanted to do something about that with Richie Meets the Rainbow. And a dad gets to be the hero when his son comes home from school after being or attempted to be indoctrinated by the blue-haired trainee teacher that he's got in class. Except this blue-haired trainee teacher runs into something that is just too scarce in our culture today, a dad. And dad steps in on behalf of his son. It rhymes like Dr. Seuss. We make fun of evil, which it hates the most. At the same time, we confront it. So it's called Richie Meets the Rainbow. You were kind enough to give it an endorsement, brother, which I greatly appreciate. It's available at Amazon right now. Richie Meets the Rainbow.
Go pick it up, people. I appreciate it. Appreciate you very much, Steve. Come back, brother. All right. It's boating season. It's time for Light in the Mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And look, there's just something amazing about boats. I don't know why. I love boats. I grew up always getting down by the water, whether it was a friend's swimming pool, an ocean, a lake, a river. And I've always loved boats. I love being on them. I love looking at them. I go to this huge boat show that's down here in Houston all the time. I'm never going to buy one because it's a huge waste of money, but I pretend every single year. But there is a drawback to boats, and I don't know what it is. I think it's something inside of the human mind. Boats make people do dumb things. I have done dumb things on boats. I've sunk a boat in the middle of the Madison River in Montana one time. In fact, as far as I know, it's still there. So it's time to lighten the mood and be careful out there. Thank you. Be careful. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.